Freedom Talks podcast, everybody. This is your host, Joe Ogden. And this week, we've got a new interview with somebody not from Freedom Physical Therapy. We have someone from outside Freedom. So Abby Olcott, who is a dietitian in Southeast Wisconsin. Abby, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I was just telling Abby before we started that I actually first heard her through a podcast of another fellow physical therapist, and we're on kind of a nutrition topic to start the year here. So I thought Abby was a perfect guest to come on and talk more about nutrition and her background as a registered dietitian.
Yeah, definitely.
Abby, give us a little background, just kind of, you know, where you're from, where you went to school and kind of how you got started on your career path.
Sure. So I am born and raised in the Peoria, Illinois area. So I'm from Central Illinois. And growing up, I was a runner, ran cross country and track, and I ran collegiately as a sprinter for Olivet Nazarene University in Bourbonnais, Illinois. And while I was there, I got my undergrad degree in dietetics. And during that time is when I chose to really specialize my career in both nutrition for athletes, being that I was one and was inspired to see how sports nutrition helped improve my performance. But also, being that I grew up as a runner, I had a lot of teammates with many struggles with their relationship with food. So I'm also a dual specialist in eating disorders. So after I got my undergrad, I did my clinical dietitian training at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in my hometown of Peoria, and my master's degree through Concordia University Chicago in applied exercise science. And I now live in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and I have a private practice called Midwest Performance Nutrition, where I specialize in doing nutrition for athletes and active people and people with eating disorders.
I feel like that's two kind of different fields, but at the same time, they're probably interconnected very strongly.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a lot of overlap in the things that I'm doing with both kinds of populations. And oftentimes I have people who fall into both populations.
Especially in the running population.
Oh, definitely.
This is probably a pretty deep question to start a podcast off with, but it seems like from my physical therapy point of view as well, that you see a lot of runners that fall into this category of to run fast, you need to be small. What is the kind of driving force that you think links the eating disorders with especially running athletes?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think there are twofold like reasons why runners are at a higher risk. So one being that if you're a runner or someone very active, you already have very high energy needs in order to meet your daily like metabolism needs within your body and your sport. So it's already hard enough to eat enough. But then a lot of the messaging that you receive both from culture, which tells you to eat a certain way that oftentimes leads to not eating enough as an athlete, and within the sport where there's all these messages about lighter is faster, like, you know, you got to look like a runner. It like people who are vulnerable to developing like an eating disorder can definitely hear these messaging and fall into that trap. So I think it's both like cultural messaging and just the sport itself and like all of the nutrition you need to in order to be healthy.
And I think something too that once I listened to your podcast with Matt and then I looked at your website, you and I talk similarly with patients. And that's something that I think with a mindset is so important. And I think it's awesome looking through your website, how you talk and kind of advertise on your website. And I took this directly from your website. No diets, body shaming, or harsh restrictions, just performance nutrition science tailored to you. I think that's such a powerful statement that I just think is not talked about in the nutrition or diet realm that we have at all.
Yeah, you're right. Because like in this world, everybody's looking for the perfect quick fix or way that they're going to improve their life, their health, and their performance. And they think if I just follow this one formula, this one diet, if I cut out this food, that's it. That's going to make the difference. But all of these like diets, that industry, they're just looking to make money. They're not individually tailored to you. They're always not necessarily taking what the true science is saying about nutrition. And I always remind people like nutrition is about health, but also you're a human who eats too. So nutrition should be about being able to enjoy your life and live your life in a way that honors what you care about. And oftentimes these very restrictive diets are not going to help you do that.
Do you feel like a lot of the patients or clients that you work with are more underfueling themselves or overfueling?
The majority of the population I work with, which I would say within, you know, active people, I work with a lot of runners, a lot of adolescent teen athletes, a lot of female athletes, and just endurance athletes in general. And all of those populations tend to be underfueling because whether it's messaging that they've heard about how they need to eat, or sometimes just a lack of knowledge of just how much they need to be eating in order to they need to do, or if they're a teen and they're also going through growth spurts and having those high needs, I'd say the vast majority of people I work with are struggling with underfueling.
Do you see certain trends, like specific macronutrients that these athletes are deficient in, or is it strictly calories overall? They're just not taking in enough nutrition.
I would say it's both. So generally they're not eating enough, like, you know, calories, energy in general, but it's because they're usually missing out on certain macronutrients. The number one most common one that I see is carbohydrates, because I mean, we think about if you've been around long enough, back in the 90s, it was this message that, you know, fat is bad. They had all the low fat items or no fat. And now the pendulum's kind of swung the other way. And we're living in this moment in our culture where it's like, carbs are bad, go keto, low carb, carbs make you fat. And there's all these, you know, keto products and low carb, no sugar products. And like, this can be a problem when carbohydrates are the number one fuel for, you know, intense activity and exercise. And carbohydrates are an essential macronutrient that our body needs to live and thrive. So when we send that kind of messaging, it's no wonder that a lot of people struggle to get enough of that in.
Do you have a basic guideline that you give athletes on? You should make sure that you're hitting X amount of carbs, fats, and proteins based on your activity level?
So it's definitely tailored individually to every athlete, depending on their sport, their size, their gender, their health status, and all of that. But in general, athletes should be hitting somewhere between 3 to 12, and see how that's such a wide range, grams of carb per kilogram of body weight based on their exercise and all of that. So like, obviously somebody who is a baseball player doing skills training versus someone who is an Ironman triathlete are going to have very different carbohydrate needs on that spectrum. But the key is both of these individuals are going to need enough carbohydrates to reach their maximum performance potential.
How would you recommend someone start, you know, trying to figure out what is the best for them? Meaning where like carbs, for instance, the 3 to 12 range, is there a basic recommendation on kind of where to start and how to track whether you have too much or too little?
So I would recommend for anyone looking to, the best thing to do is to get to a dietitian who can give you an individualized assessment and recommendations of the things that you need.
Yeah.
But there are a couple places that you can start. So a really great resource that I like to use is the Gatorade Sports Science Institute. They have a lot of resources on their website that provide certain recommendations to athletes based on the sport that they do, or if you're just an active individual, like the amount of activity level that you might do. And so say your recommended needs are 5 grams per kilogram, you know, carbohydrate based on the amount of activity you're doing. Make it easy. Say somebody's weighing 60 kilograms, 5 times 60 is 300 grams of carbs in a day. So for that person, that would be the amount that ideally they'd need to hit in order to meet all of their body's needs. And then there are some pros and cons to tracking that and seeing that information.
Do you see people, like when they see a dietitian, they see you, do you check back in with them, start this program? When do we check in to make sure that it's going well? Do you look weekly, daily, monthly?
Yeah. So depending on the client, I complete an initial assessment where we do a thorough evaluation of your health history, your nutrition history, your exercise. And then we create a preliminary plan and do some goal setting and recommendations. And then depending on the client's needs, we'll follow up, you know, weekly, bi-weekly with sessions where we kind of go through the goals that you've set, the plan that you're working on, what's working, what's not working, what suggestions you might need. Some people I have might be logging food for me. Usually it's in pictures since I don't tend to work too much with numbers based on the population that I work with and my nutrition philosophy. But we're following up to see how you're doing and what kind of tweaks we can do to make sure that you're getting enough and getting what you need.
What is your patient population? I mean, do you see mainly like high school athletes, college athletes, adult athletes, or is it kind of a even split between the three?
I'd say it's an even split. I think majority would be probably high school athletes and adult recreational endurance athletes. Okay. Many collegiate programs do have their own dietitians, so I might not often see them, but I do have a couple college athletes. And then I've had a couple like pro, semi-pro, and like amateur level athletes on my caseload as well.
What does a typical session look like with you? Or a dietitian even in general?
Yeah, so with a dietitian, I would say you could expect a lot of questions because nutrition is about so much more than the food. We've got to get to know a lot about your history, a lot about, you know, your health. So generally how it would start is we would go over, you know, general information about you, what your goals are in terms of health or performance, and then what you would want to get out of working together with a dietitian. And then it goes into what we call the nutrition assessment. So I'll start by asking you some health questions. So this might look like, you know, high weight, weight history, medical history, medications, things so I can learn on that aspect. We might talk about your sport and performance and exercise history. So what's your current training or your current workout schedule? Are you taking any supplements? What does your season look like if you're someone in a sport and it kind of changes periodically? Do you have any injury history? And then there's the nutrition aspect. So we're going to talk through what does a typical day of eating look like for you? Do you have allergies, dislikes? Do you have mental struggles around food? What's your relationship like with food and exercise? Do you have any GI issues? What is it like when you eat out? How often do you eat out? What's your cooking skills? So basically a very thorough picture of your nutrition. And then we'll start to go into some basic education about what are your nutrition needs and then what do you think is the best way to go about meeting them? So I do have some clients based on their current status who maybe we do engage in a little bit of like getting to know their macro needs and doing some light tracking of that. But then I have other clients where it's not appropriate for them at all to be tracking any kind of macros or calories or anything. So we're looking at more of a holistic or visual picture of how we can build meals and snacks and create a schedule to meet their needs.
Are you a big fan of tracking?
I say there's pros and cons. So generally I'm not a huge fan just because it can lead to obsession, but I can acknowledge that there's some helpful aspects. So tracking can give you an idea of what you're getting in your body and show you some gaps in your nutrition. Like, are there nutrients like vitamins and minerals you're missing out on? Are you missing your carb or your protein goals by a lot? And where can we find some opportunities to get that in? So I could say tracking can be a gauge in order to see where you're at, but I tend to not look at it as a guide. So I think we can veer into unhealthy territory when you're using your MyFitnessPal or whatever as a guide to what you're eating. You become scared of going over your certain calorie goal. You evaluate every single piece of food that you're eating based on the macro content or the calories, and it can start to rule your life. So that's where I say it can be a helpful tool for some people, but I don't think anybody should be living their life by what's going into their calorie counting app. And this is where my philosophy on nutrition can definitely differ from a lot of maybe, you know, people you see at the gym or other kind of nutrition professionals, because I think just counting everything is not the most helpful thing.
I agree. And that's one thing as a physical therapist that, you know, when I talk with people about food and diet, we talk about it so much in restriction. Like if somebody asks, I kind of use it, and I use it myself as a general guideline to be like, okay, where am I actually at with what I think is going on? Like, for example, I ran my first marathon last year, thought during my training, I was getting in enough carbs. And when I started tracking, I'm like, oh, not even close. No wonder I have no energy or don't feel that great. But I agree with you. I think it's a good gauge once people kind of have their bucket of kind of where they're at to know what they bring in every day. Getting rid of it much better than keeping it.
Yeah, that's a great example of how someone can use it in a helpful way in order to know more about their body's needs and what they're doing.
Do you see a lot of people that do track versus not track, or do you see it the opposite where a lot of people just have no idea what they're intaking?
I think it definitely depends on the person. I've definitely got clients who come in and they're like, oh, like, I really have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing. And then and they're like, I'm just trying to eat healthy, you know, to be able to do this. And then come to find out, they're like, oh man, me trying to eat all this protein and fruits and vegetables, I'm barely eating enough to do this half marathon training. No wonder I feel terrible. Or they might be like, oh yeah, I get tons of fiber in, I'm really working on that. And then turns out they're only meeting less than half of their fiber needs to work on this condition. And then I see people on the other end of the spectrum who are so hyper acutely aware of calories and macros and things that it can become a real challenge for them to try and not rely on that, because it can feel scary to let go of that.
One thing too, that just because you mentioned it, people becoming obsessive. And then you talked about measuring height and weight. As a dietitian, is BMI important to you?
I'll say not really, because there's a lot of problems with the BMI. So the first is with the history of the BMI. It was created by a statistician and not somebody who is a healthcare professional. And it measured white males in Europe from a time hundreds of years ago. So it's not represent population that it's used on. And BMI is also not a measure of body composition. So somebody who's an athletic person might end up being at, quote, a high BMI, but because they're very muscular, that they might be in that category. Another thing too is we treat BMI as this like catch-all category where it's like, you need to fall within this normal weight range and that's what's going to make you healthy. Well, there's no one BMI that's healthy for every single person. And while some people's natural set point weight might fall in that normal range, for a lot of people, it might be higher than that. I work with a lot of, you know, people with eating disorders, and I've worked with adolescents, you know, who their like range that was healthy for them was like, you know, above that normal BMI, because that's just what their body genetically needed to be at in order to be functioning healthily and having a natural heart rate and having their period and all of these things. So I don't think we should live and die by the BMI at all.
I agree. You just mentioned it. I was curious what dietitian world thinks of it. I mean, I think it just gives an inaccurate picture of what's actually going on in someone's life. If you just, something that we see still a lot with patients, they go to the doctor, they come to us and here's their BMI and it is not accurate of their lifestyle. It's just a number.
Definitely. And I think that can lead to a lot of bias in healthcare, because doctors see this and they're like, you have a high BMI, you need to lose weight. And it's like, this person might already be active and pursuing trying to include different nutrient dense foods in their diet. Or you don't know that that person actually might really struggle with their relationship with food. And you're just reinforcing a message to them that their body is wrong. And it says nothing about the behaviors that we can help somebody with. Like, it helps nobody if you go to the doctor and they're like, just lose weight. And it's like, okay, like that's not a behavior that somebody can magically change. I think if we looked at people more holistically and respected like more diversity in bodies, we'd have a lot better outcomes in healthcare.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, and you just mentioned it too, that the poor relationship in food is one thing in our society that kind of drives me nuts, because I look at food as fuel for regardless of what you're doing. It's fuel for your body to perform. And that can be to perform singing for an hour or watching a movie. I mean, you have to have fuel to do that stuff. How do you work on changing that mindset with patients that have an eating disorder because they have such a poor relationship with food, to kind of shape that to where they're getting in the nutrients they need, they're getting the proper micronutrients they need?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a lot of it is I take a very science-based approach. So whether it's somebody with an ED or not, I think knowledge is power, and having the true evidence of what is helpful and not just what TikTok or Instagram or Google says is good for you can help you to realize what your body needs. Like, for example, it was going all around, you know, social media saying that, you know, women need to be on a 1200 calorie diet. And it's like, well, that's enough to feed a toddler, not a full grown, you know, active woman. So teaching people about, you know, what basal metabolic rate is, which is essentially the amount of calories your body uses simply just by being at rest. And when they learn that for the vast majority of people, that's higher than 1200, well, you need way more just to sit there and do nothing. Imagine all the other stuff you do in a day and the nutrition that you need. Also learning about what different nutrients do for you and why it's important. I think knowing the why is really helpful for people. But then I also try to talk about, too, the purpose of food beyond just being fuel, because food is fuel and it's so much more. Like, food is cultural, spiritual, emotional, social. Like, food is important in so many other ways that we live our lives. And I think it's helpful to have people think about what they care about and value, because, like, it's awesome that you could think about, you know, food being great, but then if you get to the holidays and you can't enjoy, you know, this family member's famous recipe item because you're worried about the nutrition in it, like that's also a part of living too.
What are your thoughts on that diet in general of, you know, enjoying the things of life versus, you know, going too far where you're basically just eating garbage all the time? I mean, do you have a ratio that you'd like to give patients? You know, I mean, a lot of people hear about the 80-20% rule. You eat 80% clean for the most part, and then you're 20% just kind of do what you want. Or do you have a different ratio or a different method of helping people kind of balance the two?
Yeah, that's a good question, too, because the answer might surprise you. I really don't have a specific rule, because what I've found that is, at least for a lot of the people I work with, putting a specific kind of rule or like labeling foods as like different things can not be helpful, because a lot of times I see things where people are like, oh, I'm doing so good during the week. And then on the weekend, they're like, and then I drank 10 beers and then I ate 5 pizzas. Like, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but a lot of times it's because people, if they don't develop the ability to be at peace with all different foods, then they lack the ability to have moderation in a way that's helpful for their life. So I tend to encourage people, you know, like, take the labels off the food, get curious about why you're eating what you're eating and how it's making you feel. And so then, like, if you feel like you're at peace with pizza, when you are then faced with a pizza on Saturday night, you don't feel the need to eat the whole pizza and you can enjoy just what feels mindful. And then the next meal you can eat, you know, the chicken and broccoli or the pasta. Like, having that balance is going to be helpful if you can have that peace where you're not stuck in this cycle of limiting yourself and then like going like way overboard.
So it sounds like you probably are not a fan of any of the diet fads that are out there.
Oh goodness. There's a lot of very questionable and harmful fads out there.
I mean, I feel like they kind of come in spurts where, and this is the unfortunate part about social media, is a lot of people that are promoting these things, I think, aren't qualified to be doing that. They just have a lot of following, and then it kind of, you know, spirals from there. You know, from keto to intermittent fasting to fasting for longer extended periods. I mean, do you see any merit to any of them?
To me, I don't really, because every time they're trying to get you with a gimmick. Most of the time when I see people promoting diets, they're also conveniently selling supplements or guides or things that are going to help you with this diet. Or if you see the books out there, of course, this is the magical key diet, just buy my book and you're gonna find out. And usually this is not a person who's trained in nutrition, or like you said. And so I think a lot of times, like, the way that these diets work is people lose weight on them because, yes, they might go into a calorie deficit, but once you go off the diet, a lot of the weight just comes right back on because you're stuck in this dieting cycle and you're not learning really how to make peace with your food yourself and have a balance and eat in a way that matches your lifestyle. So no, I'm not recommending any of these fad diets.
And you probably get or I would assume at least, a lot of your clients or patients come in talking about diet recommendations when it comes to that, like, oh, you know, I've been doing the keto diet. What do you think about that? I mean, what's your response to a lot of?
Yeah. So I definitely try to take a very client-centered approach where I'm like, you know what, let's get curious about why. Like, why is this something that you're interested in pursuing? Or why do you feel like this is helpful? And a lot of times there's a lot buried beneath why they might be doing these things. So I don't think anybody would feel good if you come right out and be like, oh my goodness, that's so stupid. Why would you consider, you know, doing this diet? But I think in a society that really like has a lot of like weight bias and treats people differently based on their size, you can't fault somebody for sometimes wanting to do whatever it takes to achieve that like socially acceptable body. And if something's promising a quick fix and someone's got health goals that they think this is going to help with. Like, health is something a lot of us value. So of course, why would you not want to, you know, do everything you can to do what you think is going to help? So I think finding out people's whys and finding out, you know, where we can start, and then also giving them the evidence. So I think, like I said, empowering people with the knowledge as to why, and then also choosing behaviors that are likely going to be more helpful to achieve their goals. So if they're like, you know, I'm really so worried about, you know, my heart health, my cholesterol, I'll be like, okay, there are nutrition changes we can make that have nothing to do with you sticking to a strict diet, have nothing to do with you pursuing a number on the scale at all costs, and can help you get closer to those health goals or those performance goals if we're looking more at athletes.
And you just mentioned it too. What are your thoughts on the number on the scale with people that are tracking their weight with the number on the scale?
Oh goodness, that number on the scale, let me tell you. So I would say that the number on the scale does not say anything about like your worth as a person or anything outside of physical things. And I would wager to say that the number on the scale also doesn't always say what we think it says about health. A lot of people think, oh, you know, if I weigh over this certain number, you know, like I'm unhealthy, I'm this, I'm that. But what the philosophy I practice from is bodies tend to have a natural set point range that if you are, you know, moving in a way that feels good for you, that you're eating a moderation of foods that you enjoy and foods that provide nutrition, and that you're doing things in alignment with your values, you're likely going to settle where you need to be. And at least in my practice, I'm not somebody who does do intentional weight loss as a dietitian. So I'm far more focused on the behaviors than any specific number.
Do you even value tracking it at all? Like, even if you have like eating disorder, you know, undernourished, do you value, you know, looking at it from a week to week basis to make sure you're actually taking in enough calories to be gaining weight?
Yes, that is something that I do. So like if it's somebody who does need to, you know, restore from having an eating disorder or going through that process, that is something that I do monitor. So I don't always say that, like, believing that there is a naturally healthy weight range for each person doesn't mean that every weight is going to be healthy for that person. But I also still say, like, you can have a professional monitor that and make sure that things are going on, that stuff's going okay with your health and treatment. And you don't need to be so hyper-focused on that number that you need to do whatever it takes to change it or keep it from going up or what have you.
And if we're not looking at, I agree with you. I think the scale, and we talked earlier about BMI, I think those two numbers are, it just leads to so many biased opinions, I think, because we can manipulate numbers however we would like them to. If we're not looking at those two things specifically, or even tracking calories, so to speak, you know, on the MyFitnessPal, what would you use as a good gauge to, you know, really feel like you're taking in enough nutrients or not taking enough nutrients?
Sure. That's a great question. So I'll kind of split it into, like, you know, exercise and athletic performance and just general health. So for general health, there are things we can look at, like, you know, are you eating more of certain foods and nutrients that you wanted to add in, like more fiber, more fruits and vegetables, more protein, more carbs, more iron, more this, more that? How's your training look? How are your energy levels? What are your lab values like, especially like your blood work? How is your sleep? How is, like, you know, your GI symptoms? Are you all of a sudden going from, like, having all these issues to you're feeling a lot better? Like, there's a lot of those things we can look at. And performance wise, we can see, you know, how your time's doing. If you're a runner, how is your speed? How's your endurance? How's your power on the field? How are your lifts? If you're someone who's in the weight room and is working on the strength aspect, like, there's so many other different variables that we can measure that don't have anything to do with a scale that can show that we're improving in health and performance.
Do you have a favorite that you like to use?
I mean, I'm really just a big fan of how you're feeling overall. Like, if you're, like, you're feeling mentally good, you're feeling physically good. I also really like lab values. I think it's really cool to see how, if we make those changes, say if you're deficient in iron or if you've got the high cholesterol, and we make those changes and see those numbers change, that's always really cool to see.
Do you think the subjective, or do you think it, as people, that we are honest enough with ourselves with just a subjective report? Like, do you think that information is powerful in itself, where, you know, I'm changing some things, you're like, you know what, I feel good. Do you think that's strong enough to support that things are actually going in the right direction?
I do think it can be, because I think it helps people to see nutrition as this overall holistic thing, yeah, rather than equation to be balanced or to be messed with there. Now, granted, I do think it's helpful to have that professional who can give you the objective feedback or monitor those objective things if that's something that's not helpful for you yourself. But I do think if people were able to see nutrition, like, does have a lot more subjectivity to it than we think, that it can help us see the holistic picture of what making these changes can do for us.
Do you see a common theme of whether it's a mineral or vitamin or macronutrient that people are deficient in, that if you were to give one recommendation, it would be this?
Oh man, that I'll stick. The first thing you said was micronutrients. Since I'm in Wisconsin, remind me, are you in Wisconsin as well?
Yeah. Yep. We're just north of Milwaukee in Fox Point.
Yes. That's what I thought. So, I mean, we're in the upper Midwest. Vitamin D is the biggest thing that I think we can consider, because we are at a high enough latitude and on Earth, and we just don't get enough warm weather and sunlight, that almost everybody I see in the Midwest is deficient in vitamin D. So that's one to definitely check. Other nutrients to be mindful of, depending on who you are, like very active athletes need to have more carbs. Protein is really helpful if you're aging, if you are having, you know, hormone troubles or losing your period, getting more fat. Like, there's all sorts of things to consider, but the first thing that came to my mind was that vitamin D.
Do you think vitamin D, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I would agree that I think most people are deficient in it. Do you think it's safe to just supplement vitamin D, or is it recommended to see a dietitian first, see your doctor first to make sure that it's safe? Or do you think it's a relatively safe product that people can take it without, you know, taking too much where you're starting to have ill effects?
I would recommend getting your levels checked by your doctor first, because vitamin D is a fat soluble vitamin, which means that if you start taking mega doses of it in a supplement, like, our body stores that and you could see effects of toxicity by getting too much. But getting it checked can give you a baseline of where you're at. And another thing to consider is you don't have to run straight to a supplement. Like, if you are concerned about your intake and you're not quite ready to get, you know, levels tested, start including more foods that have vitamin D in it. So things like, you know, fatty fish like salmon, egg yolks, mushrooms, milk and dairy products, like, there's ways you can include more foods with it, without having to run and get a supplement.
Do you think food is always better?
I say my philosophy is food first, but not food only. So I'm not anti-supplement, but I think it is always best to start with food before running towards a supplement, because especially the supplement can fix it and get your levels back up. But if you don't fix what's going on in your diet in the first place, then you might end up just right back where you were.
Do you see a lot of people too that come in with, you know, more supplement recommendations? You know, you see they're taking all these different things supplement wise, and you look at their diet and they're not getting any sort of nutrition benefit from it, where they're trying to get all that supplementation all the nutrients from the supplement?
I do see that pretty often. So, for example, say I've got an athlete who comes in, they're like, you know, I want to gain weight, I want to put on muscle, and then come to find out they're definitely not eating enough in the first place, or they're like, I want to add this mass gainer, and they're not eating breakfast. I'm like, look, we've got a place we can start before we work on adding this. Or I have athletes like, you know, I'm iron deficient, like, and maybe we need that supplement, but we do a thorough review of their diet and they're really not eating a lot of high iron foods. Or they're like, you know, I'm just so tired after, you know, practice, or I'm just so tired in general. I heard this supplement's going to help with that, and then I see there's some parts of their diet that they're missing out on, or I'll take this antioxidant capsule, but they're barely eating any fruits and veggies. Like, there's places we can start before we go towards that supplement.
Yeah. I find that to be interesting about our culture in general. Like, the weight gainer one is one that drives me up the wall crazy. Cause if you just look at the nutrition label, it's sugar. There's really no real hard nutritional value in a lot of them. It's all filler. And people are like, oh, there's 1,000 grams of protein in a serving. It's like, you're not going to process all of that.
They're very expensive too. Like, it could be cheaper for you to focus on energy dense foods and building that up versus getting these expensive supplements.
It's one of the, as a physical therapist, and nutrition is something that just, it is interesting to me, because I look at it as you know, treating holistically for people, that we also need to, you know, see what they're eating. Because if you're eating garbage, rehabilitation, your recovery is not going to be the most optimal. But a lot of people don't even know how to read a nutrition label or what goes into a nutrition label. I just find that to be one of the most interesting things about our society.
Yeah, getting back to the basics is always going to be more helpful than pursuing the newest trend or this newest fad supplement.
Do you see a lot of patients that come in with, hey, did you hear about this fad or this supplement? Like,
asking about this fad, this supplement, what this athlete's doing, or this influencer, or this celebrity. It's very common for people to ask about the latest trends. Like, for example, I adjunct teach at my alma mater. I teach sports nutrition online. And one of my assignments is to have them watch this Netflix documentary that was big a few years ago called The Game Changers. And that documentary was about how going vegan is the newest, like, you know, thing that's going to definitely improve your performance. And it's not a bad thing to go vegan. If ethically that's what you want to do, it's going to be very hard for you to get enough of certain nutrients, and you really need to evaluate that. And it is not a magic bullet that's going to improve your performance and health compared to other changes you can make, nor is it sustainable or practical for everybody. And so a lot of these documentaries, like, I think there's another one out on Netflix now that's like some twin study and might have some plant-based things or whatever, like, they promote a very specific nutrition agenda, but then they stretch the science, they twist the research studies, and they're oftentimes funded by people who have an agenda where they just so happen to be have a stake in a supplement company for plant-based or carnivore or keto or this, that, or the other. So I think a lot of people see these new trends, but then don't see what the actual problem is with a lot of this information.
Do you even, and I feel like this is in general, the extremes get all the publicity and that's all we talk about. Do you even think there's even benefit to being completely all vegan or completely all carnivore? I mean, do you find it more beneficial to kind of have a blend of everything to make sure you're getting the proper nutrients from different sources?
I'm a full belief of, like, I'm full omnivore. I believe in getting a blend. I do know people who are vegan for, like, ethical reasons, and that's something that I respect, and that you can do that if you take a very balanced nutritional approach to cover the micronutrients and macronutrients that you might be at risk of getting too little of. I'm not a huge fan of the carnivore diet because it just, you're lacking fiber, you're lacking certain, like, you know, minerals and things you can get, and it's very expensive and all of those things. But in general, I am a big fan of an omnivorous diet.
No, Abby, I assume that outside of work, you don't just like to read research articles and focus on being a dietitian 24/7. Outside of work, what do you like to do?
Yeah, so definitely I'm a big time runner. So I'm training for a half marathon right now. I still keep up with it since I've been running since I was a kid. I'm a big nature lover. So I love the Ice Age Trail. I love, you know, Lake Michigan and all of the things that we have offered to us in Wisconsin in terms of just the nature here in the Midwest. I'm a big fan of reading. So I like to just sit and chill and read. And then I'm also a big fan of concerts and live music. So love going to record stores and going to concerts. So like to get a little bit of everything.
Now, I always like to finish my podcast with a question, because I think as healthcare providers, because we spend so much one-on-one time with patients and talk with patients about very personal things pretty quickly, because that's just a part of our job, I think our professional lives really blend with our personal lives. What motivates you to be a better person or better healthcare provider?
Man, that's a really deep question to, you know, end these podcasts on, but I would say my number one motivator is knowing that I'm impacting somebody else's life for the better and making a ripple effect in this world. Like, I'm so driven by seeing, like, my clients and patients make changes in their life that improves their relationship with food, improves their performance, and sometimes even saves them from going down a path where they could get caught in disordered eating that can really steal years of their life away. And so knowing that I'm making a difference and getting somebody's life aligned with their values and helping them to be able to be strong and healthy enough to make their impact on the world is really what drives me.
Your answer goes with basically everyone that I've talked to is, as healthcare providers, we're just trying to be better human beings and offer better lives for our patients, which makes it nice to talk to other fields as well, that we're all in this for the right reasons. We just do things differently to assist patients, which I think is super cool.
Definitely.
Well, Abby, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us. Before we finish here, if anybody has any questions or would like to contact you, where's the best way to contact?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Energy Sports Dietitian, or on my website, www.midwestperformancenutrition.com. Those are, I'd say, are the best places that you can find me.
Awesome. Thank you very much for sitting down with us today, Abby.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Freedom Talks podcast. Abby was a fantastic guest for us on the podcast, and we're super thankful that she took the time out of her day, especially on a Friday, to sit down with us and teach us more about what a dietitian is and some of the things to be mindful of, and talk about the current trends in nutrition and diet. So again, special thank you to Abby for sitting down with us. If anyone has any questions about this podcast or any other podcast, please let us know either in the comments or on our social media. We see all comments about the podcast and about the physical therapy practice itself. Also, if you like the podcast, it would really be beneficial for us and help us so much if you would give it a like or give it a 5-star rating and share it on social media. It really helps us grow and helps us reach a new audience, as we're trying to just spread positivity in the world of health, especially physical therapy and just healthcare itself. So if you could give it a 5-star rating and share it, that would be fantastic. Thank you again for listening to this week's episode of the Freedom Talks podcast. We'll see everybody in next week's episode.